exclusive interviews, real-world test drives. It's your turn to step into the driver's seat. This is The Drive. Now, here's automotive expert, television and radio host, Alan Taylor.
You know, until I hear that music, I am never ready. I'm just not ready. I sit here like a bump on a log, like a pimple on a pig's butt, and then the music starts, and I'm like, all right, I'm all fired up. BJ Colleen is here. She also works with a buddy of ours, Mark Perleberg, who has the Sunday Drive, which is kind of funny, but he and I are friends, and I do the Saturday Drive, I guess, and he does the Sunday Drive, and she works with both of us. So,
yeah, I'm busy all weekend, aren't I?
I know. It's good. Yes, I had kind of a crazy week. I went and visited the folks at Amazon. I flew, you know, back and forth from Los Angeles to Oregon to Seattle, back to L.A. You know, I'm just it's like nonstop. It's crazy. Then I went and visited the people at Honda, and I drove. You know, we talked a little bit about the Honda Civic Si, and it's
yes.
It's on sale now. It's brand spanking new. And wow, is that a nice car? We went out to their proving grounds out in the Mojave Desert. And got a chance to whoop that baby around. And, yeah, I did. I went 132 miles an hour in that little sucker.
On a closed course.
No, it was on the damn highway. Catch me if you can. Gosh. You know what? I'm so tired of being PC. I break the law every now and then. But I was in the Mojave freaking desert. There's nothing out there.
There's nothing out there.
You know
there.
What they
You're
said?
Right.
They said, if you see a turtle or a snake or a fox, let it be a bad day for them. And I go, it's going to be a bad day, because if I see one, I'm heading straight for it.
You know what? The bottom line is they're right. And so many people kill themselves because they swerve to avoid, you know, a field mouse that's running across the road. And they die because of it. It's
that's
just,
right.
You know, if it's there's something, it's you or the animal. You know, it's going to be the animal, unfortunately.
You know what? So. And God bless people that love animals. And you and me are two of them that do. But if something
Absolutely.
Gets in front of me, I am not going to listen. I don't know the thing's first name, and if I don't know your first name, I'm sorry, I'm going to run into you. That's all there is to it. So, I mean, you know, and one time a deer ran out in front of me, and I, you know, I'm an animal lover. I mean, I don't know anybody. It's like, how can you not love a beautiful deer? But I had a pregnant wife in the car next to me and a kid in a my son who was little in a car seat, in the back seat, and it was kind of the deer or us. So, you know what I did is – my brain went into hyper fast thinking mode. I thought, where can I hit this animal and not kill it? How can I drive this car and not kill us? So what I did was the road kind of had, you know, I was going around a bit of a curve and the road kind of had a little bit of a straight spot to where I could kind of, you know, use the far right side a little bit. And the deer was coming across from the right to the left. So I thought, well, if I hit the back end of the deer and scoop it up, maybe, it, you know, because the head is on the front end of the deer, if you know what I'm saying.
Usually.
Yes, yeah, usually. It's, my head is usually in the back end is normally the problem. Anyway, so what I did is I aimed for the back of the deer. With the vehicle. And what I did was, because I hit the brakes in a straight line, the front end went down of the car, I think just enough. And the deer was just tall enough that it scooped up the back end of the deer and lifted it up into the air, went right up the back end of the deer, went right up the hood, right up the windshield. And I watched that deer do a complete 360 and land back on the street. It kind of looked in my rearview mirror as I was continuing down the road. And it got up and ran away. And you know what? Had I dealt with that wrong, we could have flipped that car. That could have had, you know, dead people everywhere, if you know what I'm saying. So, yes, the answer is, if something runs out in front of you, unfortunately, you've got to preserve your life, and that thing is going to have a bad day, no matter what it is, unfortunately.
Yeah, but, I agree.
So, yes.
It's
I
part
thought
of the
was...
population clearing out, right?
Yeah.
Overpopulation of animals? No,
exactly. But
don't
I thought,
send letters.
Please. I know. Well, you know, it
we
is.
We love animals.
That's right.
But you're right.
And we both have, you know, your cat is to the 10th power, but I have a cat and a dog. So we both love animals, but I thought it was really kind of cute. I've never heard anybody say, let the animal have a bad day. That was a nice way of saying, you know, it's going to be what it is. All right, we're going to talk a little bit about what's in the news. What is in the news? My friend, a really good guy, Mark Fields, the president and CEO of Ford Motor Company, was let go earlier this week. Yeah, we're going to talk about that. This is The Drive. I'm Alan Taylor with BJ Colleen. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Stay tuned. There's more of The Drive with Alan Taylor on the road ahead.
On the track, even 1/100th of a second decides who wins and who loses. That's why Bridgestone uses advanced racing technology to create their fastest street-legal replacement tire yet. The new Bridgestone Potenza RE71R. Engineered with an innovative hydro-evacuation surface and unique tread compounds, the new Potenza RE71R is designed to give you maximum grip and ultimate cornering on or off the track. Bridgestone is changing the game in tire performance.
Welcome back to The Drive. Now, here's automotive expert, television and radio host, Alan Taylor.
And our show brought to you in part by Bridgestone. They're passionate about making tires you can count on to perform when it matters most. Bridgestone, we thank them for their sponsorship. Now, let me just get it clear here, people. I came to some conclusions over the last couple days. Did I say conclusions? I mean conclusions. Because I come up with conclusions, too, you know. I don't even know what they are. I think it's like a boil on your foot. Anyway, I've decided that I have to be more authentic, which I know, BJ, is you're probably thinking, what? But you know what? I mean, it's so hard. You have so many, you know, we're a slave to so many masters that, you know, with sponsors and what have you. Now, I'm very fortunate. We are very fortunate that the sponsors of the show are Best of Brand. We, you know, biggest tire company in the world, car companies and auto repair manuals and things, you know, Shell gasoline, Subaru. I mean, love. It's what makes a Subaru a Subaru. Listen, I'm very fortunate they have all that. But at the end of the day, you folks are very, very smart. And if I am BSing you, you know it. And I really, really do not want to do that. So I apologize if you've ever felt BSed by AT, because it's not intentional. We're just trying to talk about this shiznit in a really good way, because we love what we do. And we won't let anybody on the show that isn't totally cool stuff, okay? There, I said it. But you know what? Let's go to the news. The news. Bizarre. Bizarre news. I don't know about you, BJ, but I thought it was so bizarre. I read Facebook where Mark Fields, the president of Ford Motor Company, president and CEO, he's been with the company like 28 years. He's only been president and CEO after Alan Mulally for 3 years. They fired him, or they let him go, whatever you want to say. I think it's bizarre.
They say he retired.
Ah, yeah. Well, I mean, he's only like 52. So what's he doing retiring? He's a young guy. And maybe he did, but I don't know. He's put, what, $7 billion of profits on the books here? It's like, I don't get why. Because of the fact that Tesla, the idiots that Wall Street are that are investing in Tesla, has never made a single dime, even though, yes, it's a cool thing. They're doing some great stuff, but they value Tesla more than Ford Motor Company. So they look at, you know, for whatever reason, that Ford is so, they're like consistency over intensity, right? Intensity being Tesla, consistency being Ford Motor Company, and they give it higher marks. I don't get it. So they fire the guy who has been the guy that's added more, you know, wonderful consistency to a brand, a company that I happen to love what they stand for, what they did through all the, when everybody else was taking handouts, they went, nope, we're going to pull ourselves up by our bootstrings the way that America was built and designed by the forefathers. Hard work, sweat off your brow, shall you earn your bread. And what? Because their stock is down, they fire the chief executive officer? I don't know. What do you think?
Well, you know, this is still a family-owned business.
I know.
And I know profits are one thing, but you got to start thinking, and that's why they liked Alan Mulally so much, is that he was a futurist. He was a visionist, and he saw what was going down the road. And, you know, Mark Fields did too, but I think that in trying to turn the company to mobility as well as cars, he maybe neglected the car side a little bit. And what they're bringing up is the fact that, you know, vehicles like the Fusion, which is a very important player in the segment, in the midsize sedan segment, you know, hasn't been really refreshed. And I mean, a couple refreshments, but nothing really changed in a long time. You know, their midsize SUVs have not been hybrids, where everybody else is producing hybrids. So it was a little bit along the lines of, yeah, you're working on one end toward the future, but the other side, you're not really focusing on.
Okay, okay.
And you got to have the big overview picture, and maybe they thought he didn't.
All right. Well, hold on. So were you talking about hybrids? What about Tim Kuniskis, who's the president of FCA Passenger Cars and SRT? He's putting out the Demon with 840 horsepower. He's putting the biggest, I don't know, well, he put the Hellcat 707 horsepower engine in the Jeep Grand Cherokee. He puts what is their biggest engine, the big Hemi in the Durango. I mean, he's zagging when everybody else is zigging. And so I don't get it. And they're doing quite well, I think. And so I don't know. I call BS on something more in that family. And listen, I have a family company too, and believe me, there's some family BS that you don't want to know about. And I think that's perhaps what it is. And listen, I already at 4 o'clock this morning, I get a phone call. It's the Wharton School of Business. And there's a guy that we were trying to get him on the phone. He was screwed up. I don't know where in the world he is, but he was way off on his times. And so I'm trying to get him on the show here, if we can do it. He wants to talk about this whole thing with Mark Fields because this is a bizarre shakeup in the auto industry. We're going to add to this conversation Brian Moody from Auto Trader. And I want this is just to me, I've got to figure out what the hell is going on. And hopefully you guys are interested in this because otherwise, I don't know what to tell you. Maybe there's some freaking news that you could listen to that's not automotive, but then you wouldn't be listening to this show, would you? You'd be listening to that crap that nobody wants to listen to anymore because it's all bad news. And yes, we've got more of it. Oh, nothing we can do about that. Sorry, that's life. We'll be right back. It's the guy.
Are you looking for a tool that can quickly change from sanding to cutting to scraping? Well, the Craftsman C3 19.2 volt multi-tool offers multiple uses with just one tool. The quick blade release feature allows you to easily exchange accessories with a simple lever rotation. Variable speed settings and two built-in LED work lights will help you finish a variety of projects on your to-do list. Pick up your Craftsman C3 multi-tool today. Craftsman, made to make. Available at Craftsman.com, Sears.com, Sears Hometown, and Sears Hardware Stores.
Don't be shy by the tone of my voice. Check out my new weapon.
I don't know. I was waiting for the announcer. I guess there's no freaking announcer in this song. Hold on, I'll do it myself. And now here's Alan Taylor. Yeah, I guess sometimes you got to do, you know, wear multiple hats. It is The Drive. I'm Alan Taylor. BJ Colleen from The Sunday Drive as well. She's The Drive on Saturday and The Sunday Drive on Sunday with our buddy Mark Perleberg. And Mark on the show last week. He's a nut. You know that? He's fun.
Yes, he is.
Joining us right now is Brian Moody from Autotrader.com. Brian, I played that song. It just reminded me of you, okay?
Well, is that because I can rarely stitch two words together, or is it because of my obsessive-compulsive disorder that I frequently make you walk in and out of my house five times before you're allowed to sit down?
Oh, God.
Very confusing, that song.
Probably. I know. It's a what about what are they saying when they're doing all that? I don't know. Question for you. We were talking about Mark Fields, the poor guy that he no longer has a job. I mean, in a world where Trump went to him to get him to make more jobs, he now no longer has it. I don't know. Maybe he didn't give the right answer. Maybe he said, build a wall. I don't know. And the guy on the other side, you know, old, what's his name from Ford there, goes, I don't want a wall. I want to build cars all over the world. I don't know. What the hell happened? What do you think with Mark Fields?
I think what's fun about this whole thing is that even starting back with the Trump stuff is that he seems to be learning a lot of new things. Like, surprise, they built some cars in Mexico. Oh, wow, I'm going to mark that down as something I didn't know. I don't necessarily think that there's a relationship between him being gone and any of the Trump stuff. I mean, it's nice that, that the president's learning about these things as he's in office. But I think that what probably is happening, and this is mostly just my opinion, but it's like when a football team is doing okay, not great, not terrible, you can't get rid of all the players, you get rid of the coach. And I think that what we're going to see is probably not a dramatic shift in terms of strategy or philosophy, but maybe a difference in how that is communicated. And I would say my opinion is that this problem is likely not a Mark Fields problem, but maybe a bigger one, and he just happens to be the guy.
Yeah, he's the fall guy.
Football analogy, exactly right. I think that Ford has probably spent too much time thinking about the future and mobility and transportation and car sharing, maybe not enough time about the Ford Focus. I mean, that's just my two cents worth.
All right.
And even if that's not true, they didn't communicate the message clearly. The communication team and the leaders therein did not communicate their vision effectively to consumers, investors, and dealers.
All right. So I'm gonna clarify something here, which is kind of funny because I called Mark Fields when this happened. BJ, weigh in anytime you think you can. Because, you know, he and right now, we're like doing the Vulcan mind mesh, me and Brian.
Well, I'm just listening because I'm not disagreeing with anything Brian said.
No, I know. So here's what happened.
That comes later.
Yeah, don't worry about it. We'll get into a fight. So I called Mark Fields and I go, Mark, I think I know what's going on. When before Trump got to be president, he was dogging on Ford pretty heavy because Ford said, we're moving the Focus to Mexico. And I believe Trump thought, you ain't moving no Focus on no nothing but America. But the Focus happens to be a car named Focus, not Ford is focusing on Mexico. So I called him. I go, you know, we ought to just talk about this. And there he goes, nah. He goes, you know what? That's, he goes, you're probably right. And we laughed about it. But the reality is the car is called the Ford Focus. But I believe that Ford, you know, that Trump thought he was, you know, they were going to focus more on Mexico and less on the U.S. and he's going to build a plant. So I think there was a little bit of confusion, and I think there is a learning curve. God bless him. I mean, he's kicking ass and taking names there in the White House, but he's got to learn some of the stuff, like some of the names of the cars and things like that, like the Focus.
And well, not only that, but just the fact that the idea that, like, building cars in Mexico is somehow seen as bad is just stupid. Because the reason that you build cars in Mexico and South America is because, like, if you use the Chevy Cruze as an example, they built the hatchback there. People in America, in the U.S., they don't buy a lot of those cars. So to build that car here doesn't make financial sense.
And then ship it over there is what you're saying.
Right. So that people, and also it's a closer port of exit to the places in the rest of the world who do buy hatchbacks. So you're saving money. You're ultimately protecting American workers from a bad investment. Chevy knows, GM knows, Ford knows if they build some of those cars in the U.S., it's not going to be as economical, and they won't be able to keep the employees they have or broaden their product portfolio. That's why they build cars in Mexico, because it's closer to where the people who buy them. The reason Toyota builds trucks in Texas. It just makes sense.
All right. Put a pie in that hole, will you? Hang on a second. Let me get something in here. So the fact is BMW in South Carolina, Subaru in wherever the heck they are, Toyota in Alabama. I don't know. All the car companies from all around the world are building cars that they're selling here in the U.S. because, yes, it's easier to ship trainloads of parts and pieces from all over the world to one location in the country that it's being sold in. So I think there's some wisdom to that. We are kind of a global society of businesses, that we smarter supply chain and just in time and all that kind of hogwash that I haven't even got a clue what I'm talking about.
Well, even Nissan builds parts and engines in the U.S. for cars that they ship other places.
Right.
So they have an engine plant in the U.S. in addition to building other cars in the U.S. because that's more economical.
All right, go ahead.
You're getting off topic here, though. I mean, because I don't think that the fact that they're building cars there in America is the reason why Mark Fields was let go.
No.
We were just riffing. That's called riffing.
Right.
Yeah, we were riffing. Hold on. Take a break. We got to talk about some cars. I'll say this in closing. I feel bad. Mark Fields was a great dude. I think he was a good businessman, but what do I know? What the hell do I?
So good, I got to heal. The Dodge brothers weren't big on self-restraint, and thank goodness for that. Because when you're always pushing the limits, you engineer cars like the available 370-horsepower Dodge Charger with a Torque Flight 8-speed automatic transmission. It's why Dodge is the only brand that grows as fast as it drives. One drive and you'll discover why Dodge is America's fastest-growing performance brand. Data is calculated using the latest available year-over-year retail vehicle registrations. Dodge is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC.
Welcome back to The Drive. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Talking about The Drive, I drove my Viper ACR in today, and let me tell you, small town USA, when I'm on the road with that car, get off the sidewalks. That's all I can say. Our show brought to you in part by Dodge. Born Dodge. Domestic, but not domesticated. And wait till I get my freaking demon. I will be in jail shortly thereafter. That is for sure. Okay. I got it out of my system there. BJ Colleen here and Brian Moody from autotrader.com. Other news. We're having a good riff here, you guys. I'm feeling pretty good about the riff.
Let's talk about the Indy 500.
Yeah.
But not about the race specifically. A little side event that tended to happen because we know that Scott Dixon won the pole, right? That's great.
Yep.
And, you know, you're big, rich, famous IndyCar drivers, so you go out to celebrate winning. Where do you think they went, Alan?
I think they went somewhere where they have those, like, small lobsters and call them shrimp, jumbo shrimp. And
you would think, right?
Yeah. A place with flair.
No, that didn't happen. Scott Dixon, and he took his friend Dario Franchitti, who we all know Dario was married to a crazy lady.
Yeah.
And Scott Dixon's wife, and they went to Taco Bell to celebrate him winning the pole because it was 10 o'clock at night. You're in Indianapolis. If you've ever been there at 10 o'clock at night, you know they roll the sidewalks up. There's not a lot going on. And so that was great that they went there. The only problem is they got held up in the drive-thru. So they had two teenagers took their cell phones and their valuables and their credit cards.
I heard their wallet, too, yeah.
And their wallets and took off. And the truth is, though, they caught them, which is good. But you know, that's what you get for driving through Taco Bell in Indianapolis at 10 o'clock at night.
You got two tacos and a gun in the face.
This doesn't sound like the Indianapolis I know, which is code for I've never been there.
Are you serious?
I've never been, no.
OMG. You know what? I'm not going this year. I have been, except last year, I had been to the Indianapolis 500 probably for 20 years every year. And I don't know what it is, guys, but it's falling off the kind of that whole, you know, I mean, I was talking about Stephen Cole Smith, who writes for, you know, like Racer Magazine, everybody else.
Yeah, he's cool.
I said, what happened? You know, Phoenix, there was nobody at the race. It was like the
nobody.
And it was like, what in the world is going on? I wonder. But I think the Indianapolis 500 is such a spectacle, the greatest spectacle in racing. I think that it'll probably be what it always is. But I feel kind of bad a little bit for racing, only because it's just fallen off. And Bob Lutz said it recently. Bob Lutz was the car czar from General Motors, and he's 85 years old. He was sitting next to Mario Andretti. I might have told you this, BJ, but I'll tell Brian. I was at the 70th anniversary of Road and Track magazine. You know, they cover this stuff. And he sat right next to Mario Andretti. God bless him. And he says these words. He says, "Racing as you know it is done." And everybody went, "What did Bob Lutz say?" He's like Yoda. He's like a 6'3" Yoda. And he says, you know, "Racing of tomorrow is going to be electric autonomous cars, and the winner of the Indy 500 will be the software developer." You know, like giant slot cars that they're driving themselves. And I mean to tell you, people were pissed off. And I'm telling you, racing fans, I'm sorry. I love racing. I raced on the way here today. With I don't know whoever else that was in the other car, but I beat him, of course, in my Viper.
You have to agree with him.
I know.
I hate to say it, but he's right. You know, you're going to autonomous vehicles. You're going to kids that, you know, care about the environment and electric cars, and they're not into racing, and it's not, you know, viral. It's just not, unfortunately, the way it was. So no. I can't disagree with that.
Google 150.
Yeah, the Google 150.
Yeah. Well, you got hybrids racing now and the Formula E and everything else. Yeah. So
it'd be like the DARPA 150 or the DARPA 500.
They've actually done that. They did that at SEMA. They had a race where the drivers were in one building and the cars, now they were just small cars, the cars were somewhere else, and it was a virtual cockpit kind of thing, and they raced these little cars on a track. Well, the drivers weren't nowhere near the cars, and then you could watch that. So that's not unprecedented.
All right. I am going to change subjects. I know I hate to do it. I just like, you know, because I went on Auto Trader the other day. I got to tell you, it's been a while. I don't buy too many
As
cars.
You should.
Yes, I did. I went on Auto Trader, and I did a price comparison. I want to tell you. This is a little something for you, Brian.
Mm-hmm.
BJ knows because and if Brian was a avid Facebook friend of mine, which I don't even know if we are. Are we friends on Facebook? What the heck?
I don't know.
Are you on Facebook, Brian?
I do have Facebook, but I don't always accept invitations from people who are not.
Oh, my God. I'm the same way.
I met you in person, so I would say yes to you. But people who I don't know in person, I say no to.
You know what? I very rarely go out fishing for new friends because I just have too many. I'm like in the
But I know you in person, so I wouldn't.
Yeah.
That doesn't bother me.
Right. I know. Anyway, but I bought a van, about a 16-passenger Ford E350 van for the crew. You know, when we go to these events like SEMA and Barrett Jackson, I take a crew of people, and I get tired of renting these wonderful E350 vans that I happen to love. I happen to love those things. And so I found one. It was black, and they're normally all white. And I thought, I got to look around the entire country and see what's available. So I went on Auto Trader. And I put, you know, first of all, I put what's closest, 200 miles. And, well, what's that? Nothing. Three. What's, you know, 500 miles? You got about 20. You know, 1,000 miles, you got about 600 of these things for sale. But I could find out kind of what is the vehicle I'm looking for selling around the country for.
Right.
Because,
that's a good. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And I found that I was actually getting a pretty good deal. I was on the fence until I found through autotrader.com that, you know, I put the exact thing in there that I was looking at, and I could see that everybody else was asking about the same or more everywhere else. So I went ahead and made a deal, and I got this van. And I got to tell you, world, you know those gigantic 15-passenger vans, and BJ knows because we're friends on Facebook, unlike me and Brian. But BJ knows this. I drove with five people in the car, myself included, which is like two people, so that's like six people. And a ton of video gear and broadcast equipment, not a ton, but let's just say 500-700 pounds, because it was luggage and gear and five people and one fat guy behind the wheel. That was me. And I was driving with the flow of traffic, Brian, and I got to tell you, 16.5 miles to the gallon with a gasoline-powered vehicle that is gigantic. It's a 15-passenger. Yeah. It probably weighs more than 2 tons. It probably weighs closer to 3 tons.
Yeah.
So the point is that 16.5 miles to the gallon. Now, the question I have is, why is Toyota with the 4Runner only getting 16.5 miles to the gallon out of that? That's the question. If Ford can get a gigantic 15-passenger van, anyway, that's another story I won't riff on. But the point is, I was so happy. I got such a good deal. I'm so happy with this vehicle. Regular gas. I don't have to put diesel in it because I have a diesel that gets like 10 miles to the gallon. Which I don't know why. So anybody has an answer for that, don't call me because I don't care. I'm selling it. But the point is, you pay a premium for diesel, and now I'm buying regular gas for less. So I'm getting the equivalent of about 20 miles to the gallon if I had a diesel. Anyway, I'm very happy with my E350 2014 van, 15-passenger. And I go from a Viper into this 15-passenger van, which means that I'm very confused like normal.
You're gonna take that to Mulholland, take that van out there? And
I did. I went down Laurel Canyon. I went down Laurel Canyon. What happened to Laurel Canyon Boulevard? What happened? The entire road is gigantic chunks of concrete in every different angle that you're like, ba-boom, 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 ba-boom. It used to
All
be a great
rain.
Little racetrack. It must be. We'll take a break. We'll come back and talk about more cars. Thumbs up on a 16-passenger, 15-passenger, 4350 that they don't even make anymore, I don't think. We'll take a break. It's The Drive. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned. There's more of The Drive with Alan Taylor on the road ahead.
Haynes manuals are now available in online format for all electronic devices. With Haynes Manual Online, you get all the trusted content of the Haynes printed manual
Added features include the ability to enlarge every color photo, a keyword search function, and a detailed troubleshooting section. There are over 180 car, truck, and motorcycle online manuals to choose from, with more being added every day. Go to Haynes.com and enter your make, model, and year to find the Haynes online manual for your vehicle. You can do it for yourself. Let Haynes Manuals Online show you how.
Well, you're listening to The Drive. I'm Alan Taylor. Thanks for hanging with us. Our show brought to you in part by Subaru. Love, it's what makes a Subaru a Subaru. By the way, I was in Seattle, and Chris Duke from Motors TV, he rented a Subaru. He said, "You know, I've never driven a Subaru in my whole life. I go to Seattle, I rent a Subaru." He got a Crosstrek. He goes, "This is a really nice car, but they're everywhere." He goes, "Look, there's another one, there's another one, there's another one." The Pacific Northwest loves Subarus. That's all there is to it. So we thank Subaru for sponsoring our show. BJ Colleen, you have been driving something interesting. You've got it in your hands right now. What you got?
I've got the Kia Niro Touring, and that is Kia's hybrid vehicle. And it's kind of a cross between, I guess, a station wagon and maybe a really small SUV.
It looks cool.
Yeah, it definitely looks cool. It drives cool. I went on the press launch. And then I got it for a week because you guys know when you're on the press launch, you drive it for a couple hours and then you get it home and then you drive it all week and you get to really see what it's like in the real world.
Exactly.
And I like it. You know, it's funny. My husband drove it and I both drove it. And, you know, he has the Kia Sedona minivan. So he's used to a big V6 engine and lots of room. And, you know, that's not what this vehicle is about. It's about fuel economy. And it's about, you know, efficiency and things like that. But And I you know, the car is great. I love it. It's 29,000, was 30,000 out the door with the destination handling. And, you know, we're not talking a giant engine. We're not talking tons of horsepower. We're talking what you need to get around town and to do great driving. And if you want to be efficient on fuel, you know, we got about 40, you know, between 40 and 45 around town and on the highway.
Because it's a hybrid.
With the hybrid, down as low as I think 35, which, you know, again, my husband and I were having, Scott and I were having the comparison about, you know, what is the point if you're only getting 35 miles to gallon in a hybrid? Well, there's a lot of different reasons why you drive a hybrid. You know, it's not for if you're going to be doing a long highway commute every single day of your life. It's about, you know, going back and forth to work and saving money there and not having to fill up every week. It's about filling up maybe once a month if you need it. So, you know, it's various reasons why people are buying hybrids versus why they're just buying straight gasoline engines. But on the whole,
how's the transition,
you know,
between gas and electric? That's always my big hang up with hybrids. Like,
right.
If it, some of them do it great, and some of them it feels like someone dropped an anchor every time it switches back and forth. That's the big thing.
Yeah,
for
the
me.
Transition for what he's talking about is when it hands off from gasoline or from hybrid, from electric to gasoline, does it go, you know?
Yeah, and I agree. And some cars are a lot worse than others. And same goes for that auto start stop too. You know, when it cuts off too and drops down.
That.
But yeah, and I've had experiences, good and bad. You know, BMW to me is one of the worst. The Ford and Lincolns I've been driving are to me some of the best. But Kia does a good job at that. You know, it's obviously you're going to notice a difference, but it's not like you're, you know, the car's moving forward 12 feet when it transitions. Because part of the reason for this is what I like about this vehicle, it's got a real 6-speed. It's a dual clutch transmission. It's not, you know, the single CVTs.
Wow.
Or
in a hybrid? Wow.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So that's what makes it a lot of fun to drive.
All right. I got a question. I'm still, I know it's called a Kia Niro, right?
Right.
But if I go on autotrader.com and it says, you know, is it a compact? Is it a sedan? Is it a hatchback? Is it a van? So what are we here? I mean, what does this thing look like?
You know, it kind of looks like a BMW X1. Maybe it's a little bit smaller, kind of wagony. It is a lift back, so there's tons of room in the back. But it's not, you know, really tall. So maybe it's a little bit higher than a sedan. But it's not big enough where you'd call it an SUV. So it might be a little like a small entry crossover size. Mm. You know, the problem with vehicles nowadays is the definitions are so all over the place.
I know. The hell is
slicing up the markets. You don't know what it is. So,
okay, here's a good one. I was trying to find I went on autotrader.com and I was like, I was going to sell my wife's Fiat 500 Abarth. So I'm going to see what they're selling for around the nation. And I couldn't find the car. I just couldn't find it. And because I wasn't putting it under the right classification. Again, so, I mean, and the classifications are so important, and they're really, really important to people like, you know, Auto Trader and dealers and things like that. But the average person's like, what is it, a station wagon or a sedan or a minivan? You know, or it's like there's like an Auto Trader, and Brian, you guys can talk to this. There's like, what are there, 12 different variations or eight? Or
and combinations. So people often shop by hybrid, or they'll shop by small crossover, or they'll shop by, I think the Niro, and I haven't driven the Niro, so I can't speak to the way that it drives, but the way that it looks, BJ, you made a comment about the X1. I think if the BMW X1 was lowered an inch, it would be a station wagon. I mean, they're just so many, and Mercedes-Benz, same thing. Some of the cars that are badge CLA, it looks like it could just—it's just a hatchback, but nobody wants to say that. So then they raise it, and you know what I mean. Like there's so many cars that you see, and for a second you're like, "That looks like a station wagon, Prius Touring."
Yep.
I mean, it's a hybrid, but if it wasn't a hybrid, wouldn't that just be a small wagon?
It's confusing. There's no question.
I'm telling you what—you call anything other than a station wagon, when somebody else calls it an SUV, they'll punch you right in the face. They're serious about how they name their stuff. We'll take a little break. You're listening to The Drive for Brian Moody and BJ Colleen and me, Alan Taylor, after my Sharona.
Where does the love for a car come from? If the car is a Subaru Legacy, the answer would be the symmetrical all-wheel drive. Power goes to all four wheels all the time for optimum grip. The Subaru Boxer engine's lower center of gravity makes the Subaru Legacy more responsive around corners and gets better fuel economy than front-wheel drive competitors. What you have then is a midsize sedan with grip, handling, and enviable fuel economy. It's no wonder it turns people into people who love cars. Love. It's what makes a Subaru a Subaru.
This is The Drive with Alan Taylor.
Thank you, big voice guy. Oh, boy. BJ Colleen with The Drive and thesundaydrive.cars for the blog that she does over there. And Brian Moody with autotrader.com. Thank you for the little talk on the Niro, the Kia Niro. You guys can Google that, or she's going to be putting her blog up about the Kia Niro at, again, sundaydrive.cars. Brian, now it's your turn. What do you got? What do you got behind the wheel?
I love the song. It's I do get back up again. There we go.
Oh, God, enough of that.
It must be the Irish in me. So listen, here's what I'm thinking. They're not going to sell the Nissan Quest anymore, the minivan.
What?
And, yeah, it's kind of over. And I wonder if, like, are we going to see fewer minivans? Because remember, there used to be so many, and brands like Chevrolet, Ford, now Nissan, Pontiac, remember that? They realized we can't make a competitive van, so we're going to stop. So now we're down to, like, the Sienna, the Sedona, the Odyssey, and the Pacifica, and the Odyssey is all new for 2018. I think this is just my take. It's the Pacifica and the Odyssey are now the top dogs. The Sedona is very good if you want kind of a luxury experience, I think. But when you compare it to the Odyssey is now kind of like, believe it or not, the most kind of high-tech, family-friendly thing you can get. It's got all these tech features. But at the same time, the Pacifica feels more comfortable. So let me just ask you guys this. So the Honda Odyssey has better handling. It's more engaging to drive than all the other vans. It has sharper handling. It feels more like if BMW made a minivan. But is that what people want minivans for? Because the Pacifica does not have sharp handling. It has a smooth ride, even though the Honda is quieter. It has a smooth ride and feels kind of like a big luxury car. I wonder if people are looking for an engaging driving experience when they buy a minivan. What do you think?
You know, Brian, my quick response on that, because I've driven them both back to back, and, you know, the problem with the Pacifica, it is a soft ride, but when you have to do some kind of evasive maneuver or something like that, the van is all over the place. And where the Honda Odyssey is really controlled in the corners and things like that, to me, the Pacifica was actually a little scary because we drove it out, you know, on proving grounds. And in an emergency situation, I know I'd rather be in the Odyssey than in the Pacifica.
So that's a great point. I hadn't thought of that. My opinion is The Pacifica is nicer inside. It's more luxurious. It's better looking. And it has a better, like, on-the-highway ride. But that the Odyssey has more, like, way better tech in terms of just, like, that cabin talk thing. You ever heard of that? Like,
yep.
You, when your kids have their headphones on, you can press this button and interrupt their movie and say, hey, stop fighting with your sister. My son commented, I don't like it. It's kind of like the pilot on the plane when he stops your movie and tells you what to do. And I go, yeah, that's me. I'm the pilot. So you have to listen to what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think they're both – there's these two vans, and now they're kind of like the top. But in the meantime, other minivans have just dropped off. Are people just going to stop buying minivans?
Yeah, but can you get 15 passengers in that Honda?
No.
You get 7 or 8.
No.
So, but you know what? The minivan market has been holding stable at about just under half a million units. And you're right. It's certainly dropped down. And the fault is people. Because once they started calling it, you know, the soccer mom mobile, then it turned everybody off is the problem.
Well, here's an analogy I heard. Tell me if this rings true. The reason people are buying SUVs rather than minivans, even though minivans are great, and we have a Pacifica, which I think is a terrific van, they said, look at it from the side. From the side, a minivan has the profile of, like, if you were likening it to an animal, of kind of like a cow, let's say, whereas a Tahoe or a SUV has the profile of like a horse. And horses are more like, ooh, that's the one I want to go fast, and that's how I see myself. And that's what someone told me. I'm not sure I buy it, but it is an interesting analogy.
What is the analogy of my Viper? What is the
A tiger.
Tiger?
A mongoose.
A mongoose.
You know, it's funny, Brian, because you own a minivan, we own a minivan, and you know, and you understand this because you're a minivan owner.
I own a maxi van. Oh, go ahead.
But to me, the minivans are the greatest vehicles. They're comfortable.
Yeah,
true
they
story.
Have tons of room. You can take people around. They get good fuel economy. There's good power. We've been praising the Sedona minivan for the past 2 years that we've been driving.
Good.
I mean, we liked it so much we bought it. So I mean, it's amazing.
Well,
right.
I will say that if you have a posse like we have, because BJ has her posse, I have a mega posse. Brian has a posse. You have to have a van to take your peeps with. Me? I got to have a 15-passenger. I got a big posse, all right? Brian Moody, thank you, brother. Autotrader.com, you're the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. And BJ Colleen, check out her blog at sundaydrive.cars. Me, I'm Alan Taylor. I don't care. I don't care. I just want to drive cars. We'll be back. Stay with us.
Cancer is the number one cause of death by disease for children in the U.S. today. Since the Austin Hatcher Foundation's birth in 2006, it has grown to provide unique programs to help the children and the families affected by pediatric cancer. Support begins at the time of diagnosis and continues throughout survivorship at no cost to families. Lives touched by the foundation continue to rise each day. But we need your help. Donate, volunteer, or partner with the Austin Hatcher Foundation. Learn how you can get involved. Visit hatcherfoundation.org for more information.
Exclusive interviews, real-world test drives. It's your turn to step into the driver's seat. This is The Drive. Now, here's automotive expert, television and radio host, Alan Taylor.
So, Josh Hancock is joining us now, joshcar.com. He is the guy in the Hollywood area there. That matches up the character in the film, All Things Film and Television. And let me just tell you, Josh, I've been jet-setting around. I got a little jet lag flying on private jets and then having to get on Delta and then go over there to United Airlines and back and forth and up and down and around and around. And it just takes it out of you. It makes you angry. It makes you hangry, if you know what I'm saying.
Well... That's such a great intro from me. Thank you so much. The intro says, I'm tired, I'm cranky, now here's Josh.
I got to fly on a private jet from Burbank Airport out to the Mojave Desert, and it was like I was bummed out. I'm like, come on, we got a private jet, let's go somewhere. It was like a 20-minute flight. So I was a little bit frustrated with that.
and you end up in the Mojave Desert.
Well, no, but it was good. We went out to Honda's proving grounds, and then we drove the new Honda SI, the Civic SI.
Yeah.
And I keep saying it, and I haven't talked about it yet, and I don't know if I will even because I want to kind of get – I want to gather my thoughts together, so I may not talk about it with you, but I'll talk about it on the show.
Well, I owned an SI in my past.
We're not talking about 1991, okay? We're talking 2017.
It was a fantastic car, and they need something right now. They've got competition. Just tell me they're going to make a standard transmission, please.
Of course. Yeah. It's a wonderful switchgear. If I could say anything. The switchgear, the transmission mechanism that you change gears, perhaps the nicest feeling.
Well, it always was in the ones from the 1800s that I had. The switchgear was wonderful.
It's like a stick in a bucket of rocks.
I'm sorry, you're tired.
I am tired, but let's talk about news. Of course, when James Bond dies.
Yes.
The real James Bond, of course, not the real James Bond, but the actor. I mean, that's Hollywood news. Of course, I got to call Josh. So it's sad, right? He's the same age as my dad.
You know, and the thing is that Roger Moore was Bond longer than any of the other actors who have ever been Bond.
Yeah, he was a great James Bond. I mean,
by far, actually.
I think they all have all been good, actually. They've done a good job.
I have a personal story about Roger Moore. When I was... I must have been about 19. Roger Moore came to my little town in Maine, and specifically my little area, which is called Cape Natick. And he was making this little movie with Talia Shire, who was Francis Ford Coppola's sister. And they rented this big old house, and they were shooting. And Roger Moore, during that time, was partying quite a bit. And he wrecked a car in the middle of the town and disappeared.
No.
And my uncle was the chief of police.
Oh, no.
And had to go get Roger. And, of course, in those days, no charges were filed. He was James Bond. But you know who they called? They called Sean Connery. And Sean Connery flew from the UK over to Cape Natick, Maine, to sit down and have a talk. And my uncle sat in and said, if he doesn't clean up his act, I'm going to arrest him.
Oh, my gosh. So wait a minute. Those are the two James Bonds, right?
Yes.
So why were they together? I don't know that that's even legal that you could have two James, two of the same person.
Well, it's a high security risk.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
That way. They were very good friends, and it was also the movie producers that needed to get a grip on Roger, who was obviously just having a great summer, and wrecked this car right in the middle of town, and then just got in another car and took off, which is leaving the scene of an accident.
Right.
But, you know, it was 1899. Those things happen. I had my new Honda.
Hang tight. That was a long time ago. All right. Yes, Roger Moore, if you haven't heard, passed away. Very sad. One of my all-time favorite. Of course, that was when I was growing up. Had a big influence on me. That's why I'm so cool today. I know. You wanted to know why. That's it. We'll take a break. It is The Drive. Josh and I will be right back.
Stay tuned. There's more of The Drive with Alan Taylor on the road ahead after these messages.
On the track, even 100th of a second decides who wins and who loses. That's why Bridgestone uses advanced racing technology to create their fastest street legal replacement tire yet. The new Bridgestone Potenza RE71R. Engineered with an innovative hydro-evacuation surface and unique tread compounds, the new Potenza RE71R is designed to give you maximum grip and ultimate cornering on or off the track. Bridgestone is changing the game in tire performance.
Welcome back. It is The Drive. I'm Alan Taylor. Our show brought to you in part by GoRVing.com. It is that time of year. And you know you want to go RVing. So to find out all of what you need to know, whether it be great campsites, where to rent an RV, or if you want to buy one, all under one roof. GoRVing.com. Too simple. We appreciate them for working with us. Josh Hancock is here. He is the guy with all things film and television that matches the character in the car. And we were talking about the passing of Roger Moore, James Bond, 89 years old. And one of my favorites.
I love, you know, there have been lots of tributes. A great automotive sites have put together the compilation of his car chases, of the cars that he drove. It's kind of fun stuff. I've reposted a lot on my Facebook site, which is also Josh Carr, one word. Hmm. Movie news. My buddy Steven Soderbergh, who I've made a few movies with, he's got a movie coming out in August called Lucky Logan. And Lucky Logan is actually shot in and around the Coca-Cola 600 NASCAR race.
Oh.
And it's an elaborate robbery scheme around the race. And they had to enlist, of course, the help of NASCAR. There are six cameos by NASCAR drivers and some big names in this movie. Daniel Craig.
Wow.
Channing Tatum.
Wow.
Katie Holmes.
Huh.
And we haven't seen, you know, we've seen NASCAR stuff, but this doesn't have to do with the race other than there's a big robbery at the race. And Steven Soderbergh is such a talented director. I suspect this is going to be a very, very fun movie.
Well, when's it coming out? Because the Coca-Cola 600 right after the Indy 500, right?
It's coming out August 18th. They were there last year filming.
Yeah. Okay.
Work with me, Alan.
I'm trying. I'm not even going to the Indy 500 this year. As, again, I was saying this earlier, maybe the second time in a row that I've missed it, and maybe I need to miss it for a few years so I can appreciate again, but it lost it, you know, lost a little of the luster for me lately, so I don't know.
So you're not going this
year?
I'm
not going this year. Staying home. Okay. I'm going to be pulling weeds in my yard.
I mean, it doesn't have anything to do with the fact that you're barred from the race, but other than that.
Not true.
They've never had a disruption at the food court like they did with you. So I know.
The guy grabbed my hot dog. What can I say? I said, leave my hot dog alone. Anyway, it's another story.
Other movie news, John Wick. You know the film John Wick? You probably never heard of it.
That's with Tom Cruise.
Keanu Reeves.
Okay. I don't know.
The thing about John Wick is that they revived the movie. I think there was a 6 or 8 year stretch before they came out with John Wick 2. John Wick 2 was very successful. Now, a big star in that movie is a 69 Mustang. And the scene in John Wick 2 with the Mustang is extraordinary, and it's also very unusual because it's a mix of CGI, of computer-generated stuff with cars that's never been done. Mm. And it was just fascinating. Now, he wrecks the car in number 2. They are speeding to get number 3 to the screen. They haven't started shooting it yet, but every car manufacturer in the world wants to be involved with that movie. Interestingly enough, at the end of the second movie, he says he takes that car in a big pile and takes it to his body shop and says, fix it. Now, it's going to be interesting to see whether a product placement deal is made or whether we see the Mustang come back.
It's funny, too, because Keanu Reeves is a really, you know, he's I don't know if I could call him a car guy, but he's definitely a motorcycle guy. As you know, he owns a motorcycle or part of a motorcycle company.
He owns a company called ARC.
Yeah.
And yes, he has put everything into his motorcycle company, and they're very collectible in Hollywood. He's also a very charitable, one of the most charitable individuals.
Mm-hmm. No.
And he likes to drive old American stuff, by the way, old trucks.
Nice. What do you know about, by the way, Top Gun? I was talking about Tom Cruise earlier. There's a bunch of scuttlebutt on Facebook that they're going to do Top Gun 2.
Yeah, they're going to do it. That's most of it. I mean, you know, there'll be a huge product placement deal in Top Gun. Remember the last one, Kelly McGinnis had a Porsche 356.
Right.
He had a motorcycle. I suspect that Porsche will rush in and try to make a deal. But that will be something that, you know, there aren't that many cases where money is involved, but money will be involved in that type of movie for product integration.
All right, we're talking cars and movie with my movie car friend, Josh Hancock, joshcar.com. We'll take a little break. I know I saw you with a pretty interesting Mustang recently. Looked like you were with a friend that had a classic. I don't know. We'll get on the other side of the break here. Movie news, car news, together with Josh Carr. We'll be right back. It is The Drive. Also, thanks to our friends at Brembo, the choice of champions. You're listening to The Drive.
Not all projects offer enough space to swing a hammer. Now you can drive a nail in tight spaces with the Craftsman C3 19.2-volt Hammerhead Auto Hammer. With an adjustable head that pivots 0, 45, and 80 degrees, you can work on projects in tight corners or overhead with ease. Plus, two built-in LED lights and a convenient magnetic sleeve that helps position the nail will make your next project a breeze. Craftsman, made to make. Available at Craftsman.com, Sears.com, and Sears Hardware Stores.
Welcome back to The Drive. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
So we're talking with Josh Hancock. He is joshcar.com. We've been talking about some upcoming films with special interest cars and things, of course. We didn't talk about Fast and Furious or whatever. Do they actually still call it? Don't they call it like Fast 12 or Fast 8?
Well, it was Fast 8. They are already scheming on Fast 9, and there's contracts with Dwayne Johnson for 3 more movies.
Oh, jeez. I haven't seen it. Everybody's like,
and
oh.
We're going to get... Well, I'd be interested to see what you think. Yeah. I mean, as a car guy, I hate to say this, but it was... I look at it from the amount of money that FCA, Chrysler, Dodge, et al., and it's really a Dodge movie... And I just want them to get more bang for their buck. And they spend an awful lot of time in classic cars. And I thought they might use the Demon more because they could have had it filming. And they didn't. So
now, maybe they, you know why? Maybe they didn't want it. Maybe they didn't want it to get out while, you know, because that car, he said secrecy was a big part of it. So
except that... You know, you're not talking about a design that's never been seen.
No, I know.
And they also did something. I have to think about the movie, but they did something with the Demon in another movie that was a surprise. I went back and looked at it. Oh, it was a bank robbery movie with Jeff Bridges, and they put a Demon in that in a very small scene where these two kids come up in a gas station, and I was like, hell, that's a Demon, long before, you know, the car was coming out, because you really couldn't tell unless you were a car guy that it was a Demon.
Right. Well, he said it was in development for 2 years. By the way, what about Mission Impossible 6? You got Fast 9, Mission Impossible 6. I mean, you know, come up with some new names. Come on.
I do want to say also this weekend is the debut Baywatch.
Oh, yeah.
And you're going to see F-150s in Baywatch. And that was a very sought-after role. Now, nobody paid any money, but you can bet that Ford paid for some other things for them.
Hey, speaking of Ford, hold on a second here, because we're talking about product placement, everybody. It's a car show, so cars and movies go together well, like cars and music. What do you think about Mark Fields getting let go or fired or whatever you want to call it?
Oh, you're going to ask me that. I thought you'd have all these industry experts.
Hey, we
on.
Did. We did. Where were you? But I'm just
curious.
I'm going
to tell you that I was very mixed because I like Mark and I think he's been doing a good job. And he came up through the ranks as a car guy.
Yeah.
Now, on the other side of that, I think that Billy Ford is very much in tune with what he has to do for the future. He's building a $1.3 billion new campus in Dearborn that will encompass all their 60 buildings, and it will be open architecture, and he wants it to run like a technology company. And in order to do that, he's got to shake out the old.
Well, here's the deal. I talked to the global chief technologist that is no longer working at the company, and even when he was working at the company, he said, in the future, we will be a technology company that makes cars. Right now, we're a car company that uses technology. Yeah. So yeah. that was 2 years ago, and his prediction is coming true. All right, before the segment is over, and I got to say, get the hell out of here. What is this 2017 Mustang you were driving recently? It looked like it had.
Oh, my God. I'm in a 5.0 with a 6-speed manual in grabber blue with white stripes, and I couldn't be any happier.
I know. It looked good.
Because also, just on a practical basis, I've been traveling with this car. This is a long-term loaner. That this car all around is pretty impressive. I drove the Mustang when it came out in this form, and they've actually refined it. But the big surprise is the amount of respect you get on the road.
Really?
I took it to the Porsche Experience, which is where the Porsche test track is.
Sure.
And I drove up. It's a glass building. And when I walked in, there's four guys looking at it out the window with Porsche shirts on. And they were like, is that a 5.0? Can we go look at it? It's very funny.
So just real quick, because we got about a minute left.
Yeah.
Drivability, I mean, is it a car that you could live with every day? I noticed you had a 6-speed manual transmission in your notes here.
Yes. There's not a lot of clutch pressure. The gearbox is very well done. Yes, it's an easy car to drive.
Yeah.
And they've made a difference in 2 years from that, because the first car I drove didn't have that. Easier clutch prices. So, yeah, you can drive this car every day.
Last question.
On the highway, I get 27.5 at 80 miles an hour.
Holy mackerel. That was not my last question, but that's good.
Tall sixth gear.
What is the window sticker on that car? I'm just curious.
$41,000.
Dang, it's a nice car, man.
435 horsepower.
That's just a wonderful machine.
With cooling seats, it's not a stripper. It's got some options to it, and I have to say I could buy the car.
All right. Last thing, did you talk about Wild Boy Willie? I mean, I'm looking at notes here. The movie.
I didn't. We'll bring it up in our next segment.
So Deadpool 2, Fast Furious 9, Mission Impossible 6, Wild Boy Willie, Top Gun, a bunch of car-type movies with great cars
There's
in them.
A lot going on. Right. A lot going on, and it's a lot of fun.
All right. Josh, thank you for hanging with us.
Thank you, Alan.
You need
Get
to come to the studio.
Enjoy the weekend.
Yeah, you too.
Is All right.
Wait a minute. That's not next weekend, isn't it? That's next weekend.
It's this weekend.
It's this weekend? Oh, my God. I got to go pull weeds.
I may not come back.
All right. JoshCarr.com. That's Josh Hancock. Thank you, my buddy.
Thanks, Alan.
We'll take a little break. Also, we want to thank our great sponsors. We've got some really good ones. But right now, Dodge, because I'm driving my Viper this weekend, and I'm having a blast. We'll take a break. It is The Drive. Get it right.
The Dodge brothers weren't big on self-restraint, and thank goodness for that. Because when you're always pushing the limits, you engineer cars like the available 370-horsepower Dodge Charger with a Torque Flight 8-speed automatic transmission. It's why Dodge is the only brand that grows as fast as it drives. One drive and you'll discover why Dodge is America's fastest-growing performance brand. Data is calculated using the latest available year-over-year retail vehicle registrations. Dodge is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC.
This is The Drive with Alan Taylor.
Well, thanks for joining us. And all I can say is I must cut through the BS. That's right. Somebody's got to do it. So I have people that I know that are we'll call them the no spin zone, the no BS people. One of those guys right now is John Ellis, technology expert, Ellis & Associates. If you've heard my show, you've heard him. He was at Ford. He was the, I'm probably going to get it wrong, but the chief technologist or the head global technologist or the head up the butt guy. I don't know. What was your job there?
Chief troublemaker.
Exactly.
There you go.
I was talking to Josh, and I said 2 or 3 years ago, maybe it's been 3 or 4 years ago, I don't know, whenever we first met and we got to be friendly, and you said to me one time, you said, right now, Ford Motor Company is a company that is a car company that uses technology. And in the future, and not too far down the road, it's going to be a technology company that makes cars.
Mm.
And I thought to myself, wow. And you said, I am not a car guy. I'm a tech guy. What did you call yourself?
I'm a software guy.
Software guy. I don't know the difference. What is the difference between a tech and a software? It's the same thing, isn't it?
Well, it can be. I mean, put it this way. For the audiences that you're going to be talking to, tech and software are the same, but there are nuances, but it doesn't matter.
Okay. So here we're going to come back all the way around to the fact that now with the firing or the letting go or the saying goodbye or the retiring of Mark Fields, who I liked a lot. Mm. He was a very personable guy, but you probably knew him from a whole different perspective. So with all that going on and they're talking about building some big new, you know, technology center in Dearborn and, you know, they're making that move towards tech because Tesla, who has not made money yet, somehow is worth more in the stock market world than Ford Motor Company that's got a $7 billion profit on the books.
Mm.
So I don't know. What the hell is going on? I thought maybe you could give some inside perspective.
Well, so Mark Andreessen of Andreessen Horowitz fame and the founder of Netscape and a pretty savvy investor was being interviewed on Monday, right when the news came out from Mark Fields. And he said Ford or auto companies like Ford are like Nokia back right before Apple crushed them.
Yeah.
And what it was in reference to is that a software company who builds technology like Tesla, their entire mindset from the ground up is about being a software company. They contemplate being a software company, and then they build the hardware around that. And that while it's a very simple nuance difference, it changes the entire perspective of how you build the product, how you do revenue recognition, et cetera, and allows for the things that Tesla does, right? They do software updates consistently. Some of them they sell for money. Some of them they just do because they've customer delight. And others they do because of safety. That's all anathema to the car guys, right? If you want something new, you got to buy a new car. So it's a completely different mind shift, and it's exactly the same mind shift that the Nokias and the Motorolas of the world were struggling to try and accomplish when Apple crushed them.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Wow.
Yes, 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 yeah. It's a big deal. It's a very big deal. And you point out that Tesla's not making money, but for a very long period of time, for almost 20 years, right, Amazon never really posted. In fact, I don't think it ever posted a profit. And the whole mindset from Jeff Bezos was, I'm doubling down on investments in others, and I'm building and I'm investing inside the company, so I'm showing a book loss. And then all of a sudden, he turned the corner and look at their market cap, look where they're at. They're the darling, right? Those people who were with them stayed with them on the future potential. They were building and beginning to build market share, right? So it'll be interesting to see what happens with Tesla if it's the same model. We'll see.
I got this glassy-eyed look in my face right now because you actually made sense. I hate that.
Well, here's the problem, right? It does make sense, and because it makes sense, now a lot of people in the industry look at themselves and are like, holy cow, like, what is going to happen? Where's this going to go? And can companies turn it around, right? There's not a lot of companies that exist that have been able to make that transition. It's a hard transition because it requires you to start from the ground up. It's a very hard thing to do.
So when you and I first met, John, you and I will probably talk about this for many years to come, or at least I will, because you don't give a crap.
Oh, so you've debased our relationship. I love you dearly. What are you talking about? Go on.
Only because you and I can speak, like human beings
openly
to each
freely.
Other. Yes, exactly. and we do it on the air in front of, a million people. But
right.
the thing is that, I said to you, I am this, well, actually, we discovered it because I introduced you, and I was the guy who, the guy who won the Baja 500, that drives the race cars, that has the muscle cars, that loves the burning smoke of the rear tire spinning. And you were the guy that's like, I am not like that. I am a software guy. I don't like cars. So we were polar opposites. Mm. Yet we can come together with the fact that I'm like the guy that has the peanut butter and you're the chocolate, and it's like, together, we can actually do something. We'll make a Reese's peanut butter cup, which is good. And
mm-hmm.
and I totally get what you do, and I love it, and I embrace it because of you that can explain it like you just did in commonsensical ways, where nobody else has been able to, they're all like, oh, yeah, he was great. He was a great guy. What the hell are they doing firing him? There's no actual data in behind what I'm saying. I just like the guy, right?
Right.
And you always bring the data.
Well, I've always said to you, right, when people have asked, and I've told you this before, when people say, John, who do you think is going to win? I always tell you, I don't know the answer, but the characteristic of a winner is a CEO that understands and has competency in software. Because none of the OEMs today actually have a car problem. None of them. In fact, they make some of the best cars quality-wise ever. The issues are software related, if there are any. And then the other issue is the business model, the fundamental business model that something like a ship and remember, i.e. Tesla, who can always go out and touch that car and do new things to it over time. That construct is what they're struggling with. And so I'm not saying it was good or bad to fire Mark or to let him spend more time with his family, but it is an acknowledgement and recognition that the history and experience of building steel and shipping steel worldwide isn't what's really valuable anymore in terms of these companies. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens, because Jim Hackett himself isn't a software guy, right? Zero software competency. That doesn't mean he won't maybe do well, but he doesn't have the competency that I think they probably really need if they're going to really make that turnaround successful.
But could he not hire a guy like yourself that he goes, you know what, this guy gets it. I like him. He does get it. He brings the data. You know, and I think that's what it takes, and maybe Mark wasn't doing that.
Well, that's possibly part of it. But here's the other thing, right? I mean, I had the pleasure of speaking to an insurance institute session. We were talking about transitions. And what I said to him, I said, listen, as an underwriter, if you're underwriting a business, corporate insurance, and I show you a CEO who has zero understanding of business, doesn't understand profit and loss, doesn't understand books, capital, investments, doesn't understand business at all, what do you say? And they're like, oh, my God, the risk factor is so amazing. We'll write the policy, but it's really risky. I'm like, okay, great. That, in my world, is old school. And today in the new world, you must have P&L and S, i.e. software. You have to have software competency. It is not sufficient that the CEO of a corporation does not have software competency in this day and age. Mm. If we're going to say that you have to have business acumen and it is a requirement to be a CEO, I now tell you it's not just business, it's business plus software. You don't have to be the software guy or girl, but you got to have the competency and the acumen so that you can engage smartly with the people who are telling you stuff. Because guess what? It's going to be painful to transition. It's not going to be easy. And if you don't understand it, then at the end of the day, are you really going to undertake it? Are you going to really commit to it? So, again, little perspective on where and where they got to go.
P and L and S. Did you just make that up?
Profit, loss, and software.
You made that up, man. It's awesome.
Not on the fly. I did it yesterday. But yes, I did make that up as part of my presentation to try and make sure that people got the concept.
Do you guys understand why I love this guy so much? He is awesome. Don't go anywhere. We're going to talk more on the other side. His name is John Ellis, technology expert, handsome man, father, husband, and my friend. It is The Drive. Alan Taylor here, and I wanted to share the news with you about the new Haynes Manuals Online. They're the worldwide leader in vehicle repair information, and they now offer online manuals that are formatted to fit all electronic devices. With Haynes Manuals Online, you get all the trusted content of the Haynes printed manual, but with so many added features that help you get the job done right. I ordered one for my car and access it right through my tablet. There are now over 180 Haynes Manuals Online available covering cars, trucks, and motorcycles. You can order yours today at Haynes.com.
Welcome back to The Drive. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
P and L and S. P and L, profit and loss, and software. John Ellis is on the line. That is pure super genius, John. I love it. Now, you worked at Ford. What was Fields like? I mean, did you ever work with him close?
I had the pleasure of interacting with them a few times. I mean, the first real time that I actually was able to meet with them was when Larry Page came to campus, and we had a little bit of an engagement to try and showcase what Ford was doing and whatnot. And from there, I don't know, maybe 6 months in duration, we'd meet every month to kind of talk about software strategy. Because quite frankly and honestly, it was really the first time he'd been able to hear the whole story in its entirety woven from somebody who actually had done software and strategy like that in other companies. And he liked it, and we spent time together. So, yeah, a nice guy, smart. I mean, he is very smart. You don't get to be in that position without being smart, right? He is smart. He's very smart. He's savvy. He understands how to talk to people and how to engage. I think Bill Ford made it best when he talked on Monday, is that this day and age, right, there's an acknowledgement. The board is trying to figure out, like, uh-oh, this isn't a car problem. It's a business model strategy software problem. And in that regard, Mark didn't have the skill set because he hadn't done any of that.
Yep.
And not because he's incapable of doing it. He just hadn't done it.
Neither has the new guy, though. We're talking about the fact that they fired or got let go of the Ford Motor Company CEO. And my friend Mark Fields, who's such a great guy, but we're kind of dissecting that with a super Wile E. Coyote John Ellis, super genius. And it makes all you are making all sense in the world. But what doesn't make sense is they bring a furniture maker guy in there, and maybe okay, he's been working in the tech part of the company for a couple of years. Maybe he's learned some stuff, but his I don't see that he is more qualified. And maybe again, I don't know who the hell am I to know than right. Mark Fields was. So I don't know. This is like kind of bizarre for me.
When I saw it, I'm like, okay. I guess I said to you before in the previous segment, right, the characterization of a company that's going to win is that they don't have the current CEOs in place today, not because the CEOs are bad people or stupid or not competent. It's just that in the context of the problem that they're trying to solve, they don't have that skill set. And that problem, again, is software strategy and business model are changing from ship and forget to ship and remember. And so it will be fascinating to see what happens. If I remember correctly, when Jim, he was a board member, right, then stepped down from the board to take over the mobility group, and then now is the CEO. I don't think he has any software experience of any kind. Zero, but I could be wrong.
Does that concern you at all as a tech guy or software guy?
Well, obviously, it's the first reaction is, okay, great. There's at least an acknowledgement that it's not a car problem, and so therefore a new person or a new type of person is required. I think the second part, i.e. the fulfilling of who they put in there, I'm not a shareholder, so I'm not troubled. But from that standpoint, I don't think it's the right message, because again, Elon Musk is a software guy. That's who they're competing with. Jeff Bezos is a software person, right? The people that they're competing with are software people who happen to be building and playing with cars. That's the key construct. So I'll be interested to see what happens.
Good Lord. You make so much sense. I mean, I want to like take you back over there and say, what are you doing, Ford? You got rid of the best guy in the whole world. You know, you need to get him back in there.
But you know what? I mean, you and I have talked about this, right? My leaving Ford, it's fine. I'm happy. I'm doing great stuff. I harbor no ill will to the company.
No, I know.
It was interesting. It was fascinating. It was interesting being inside it and seeing it and experiencing it. And I have some very good friends from in there. But having been inside it, I can tell you, right, the transition is going to be difficult. And if any of the other OEMs are similar in structure, kind, or behavior, it's going to be exceptionally hard. It's a very, very hard transition. It's completely different than anything you ever do before, right? It's completely different. And again, I'm not trying to make the comparison. Mark Andreessen did it, but it's a good comparison to the mobile industry. I mean, I can remember clearly Ed Zander sitting there and talking about the iPhone and Apple and why Apple was going to be better than Motorola, and it came down to revenue recognition, simple business practice. When Motorola sold a phone, they took all the revenue and they recognized it in the quarter they sold. When Apple sold a phone, they only recognized about 75% or 70% of the revenue, and they put the other revenue in deferment. And the reason they did that, and the argument was, because we're going to keep building software for this product over time, and we pay for it by drawing it down.
Good
what
Lord.
That gave them then was an instrument, a financial instrument, that allowed them to tell the street with pretty good certainty, our revenue next month or next quarter will be X. And by that consistency, they were able to get huge shareholder value and shareholder lift. That's a software company who builds hardware.
Oh,
software first thinking.
Hold it. You're making me sweat. I'm going to take a break. We're talking to my friend John Ellis. It is The Drive.
If the measure of a car was how many people it turned into people who love cars, the Subaru Outback would be worth its weight in gold, thanks largely to its symmetrical all-wheel drive. Unlike other systems that wait for a wheel to slip, it powers all four wheels all the time. All while with better fuel economy than midsize SUVs. And the fact that the Outback is made in a zero landfill plant doesn't hurt either. It's a car that is truly built to be loved. Love. It's what makes a Subaru a Subaru.
This is The Drive with Alan Taylor.
Well, we thank our great sponsors, and we have many. And one is, for those who like to still work on their cars, Haynes Automotive Repair Manuals, the information resource for the DIY enthusiast, that's me, and the worldwide leader of automotive and motorcycle repair information for over 50 years, HAYNES.com. For those who do not like to work on their cars, like John Ellis, they take it to the dealer. That's it, period. That's probably the best way to go for you and a lot of people, you know. But let's talk about it again. John Ellis, everybody, he's a technology expert. He did work at Ford Motor Company for a number of years. And when I met him there, he was the head guy. We met at CES and the Consumer Electronics Show. And Ford was there in a big way. But the last week's show, I had a guy named Benjamin Hunting on, who is Ben Hunting. To know him is to know the Sasquatch, okay? Because he is just a wild animal of a human being. But you know what? He's the sweetest, nicest guy. And like my relationship with you, we can communicate openly about things we believe. And he says, I am so sick and tired of all this talk about autonomous cars. He said, I live in Canada. And when you get these sensors dirty with the snow and the ice and the salt and the grime, they stop working. Autonomous is not going to work here in Canada. And he was like riffing on it. And I thought to myself, boy, there's that real world perspective, right? So what do you say about that when you software guys hear from Sasquatch Man that says, grunt, grunt, this isn't working, you know?
You know, I mean, I think there's an inevitability to autonomous driving. And the simple fact is, sadly, 40,200 people lost their lives last year in the U.S. and about 1.25 million total lost their lives in the world, right? It's human-based driving is in the top 10 in terms of all known causes for death to human beings. And so from just that standpoint, I think there's this movement that's almost, I'll say, inevitable. But he is right, right? I think there's this massive, you know, thrilling movement of people like, when's it going to happen? What's it at? Roy Amara was the first ever futurist, and his quote is, you know, we have a strong tendency to underestimate how quickly something will happen or how slowly it will happen. And we have a huge tendency we overestimate how quickly something will happen, and we underestimate the impact it will have. And so the point being is that we always believe it's going to happen faster than it does, and then we always underestimate the kinds of change it would wreck or bring to the economy. And I think that's the case here, right? Is it 50 years, 70 years, 25 years? I don't know what it is. But a lot of people are throwing a lot of money at it. What I have learned is you bet on the wrong side if you bet against the big house like that. So we'll see what happens.
Well, again, I hate you. I love you and I hate you both, because you bring perspective that so few people can articulate in such a kind of matter-of-fact, common-sense way that – you know, and you agree with things like, you know, my Sasquatch friend Benjamin Hunting, of which I'll play this back for him, because, you know, a lot of times tech people start making excuses, you know, for their technology when it's not doing or performing the way it should. But you don't. You're just like, you know, he's right. But that little saying you gave, that's right. The impact is coming and we better open our eyes. And part of the reason is because my 89-year-old dad should not be driving, and he loves driving. And I would be absolutely 100% sure that if he was able to get into a car and tell that car, take me down to Safeway so I can buy some groceries, because he wants to be mobile, that he would take that option, knowing that at this point in his life, he loves mobility. And that's why Ford, you know, is using the word mobility, and more companies are more and more, because it isn't driving and the farfignug and the fun of driving anymore. It's the being able to get to someplace safely and economically and all the other reasons that are much more the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. But this new way of doing things with autonomous vehicles may just be an answer. But then the guy like myself, who is Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I am the old version of him. I still want to drive my Viper ACR down to the store and terrorize old ladies and burn out at will and burn fossil fuels, John. You understand.
And you ought to drive in reverse to keep the mileage down, right?
That's right. I am Ferris Bueller's Day Off, old now, but you are the Ferris Bueller's Day On. You stayed in school and got an education, and I need you, and we need you more often to be on this show. John, thank you very much for making sense of all this. I love it, love it. All right, that's about it this week, you guys. Again, you know, I'm just trying to make sense of all of it myself, and I hope that John and I have done that for you. We'll see you next week right here, same time, same channel, on The Drive. Hey, it's Alan Taylor. Are you looking for an opportunity to buy a franchise, one that you can really wrap your arms around? Crunch Fitness is really a great opportunity for you. Now, here's a fitness company that's about 10 bucks a month to join. So even if you just want to join, it's a great deal. You want to check it out because I have been personally watching the company grow like crazy. Visit them online at crunchfranchise.com and be in business for yourself, but not by yourself, and have fun doing it.